Hello, welcome to the Adam Fitch podcast. I'm your host, Adam Fitch. You should know that by the name and by the fact that I've actually done 10 of these by now. This should be the 11th. So today I'm joined by somebody who makes me feel old and underachieved all in one, which is an amazing thing, you know. Like it's not so much a threatening feeling as it's like, what the fuck have I done with my life? But hey, so Jacob Wolf, previous winner of Esports Journalist of the Year. Current journalist for ESPN Esports. Thank you very much for joining me today, Jacob. And it's only a bit of a joke about me feeling threatened and such, you know, but you're doing bloody well. You're doing bloody well.
Yeah, thank you. I take zero offense to that whatsoever. I'm super happy to be here. Thank you for having me on.
No, of course. So the first thing I want to talk about, The aim of the podcast is to speak to different people about different sectors within the industry, right? Because I don't think there's anything that's really doing that. So, as you'd imagine, having you on, I want to talk about journalism. I'd say my first question is, first off, what characteristics as such do you think makes a good journalist, and what is it that's led you down this career path?
Yeah, so I would say, like, ever since I was in middle school, I was fairly extroverted, and I certainly think that, like, that's a typical trait of pretty successful journalists, is being extroverted, because I think you kind of have to be, and if you're not, you sort of have to force yourself to be when you're dealing with people. You know, as a reporter, a lot of what I'm doing in any given day is, like, phone calls and things like that, and, like, being able to ask people questions without being afraid of what the answer might be. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said this to a colleague the other day, but like the number of times that I've like picked up the phone and seeking information and have been like told to buzz off versus the number of times that people have been open with me and honest with me and trust in me is like, yeah. the number of people that like trust and are honest is like way bigger than the number of people who tell me to buzz off or hang up the phone. And I think that at some point, like sort of where we are as an industry right now with esports journalism, that a lot of reporters are afraid to do that because they like kind of answer the question for themselves. Like, yeah, this person's not giving me the time of day. They're not going to tell me the truth. You know, they're not going to want to go on the record, or they're not going to want to go in background and give me information. And I think that like all of that is just people getting into their own head and like fear of the unknown, right? And so I think that really like confidence and also confidence in the ability to like overcome some of that social anxiety is like super necessary to be a successful journalist in esports, I feel.
I agree that kind of leads into something that's been happening a lot with me recently. More and more people are reaching out to me like who are like starting out and say like, how do I getting at a publication? And I'm just like, well, if you message them, like, I mean, if you can't even do that, like if you can't even find some contact details that's in the Twitter bio or something, you know. And it's like there's not really anything bad to come from asking somebody and getting a no, right? Like the worst that can happen is they say no and you move on to the next thing, you know, whereas there's plenty of potential good shit to come from actually reaching out, you know. So yeah, I agree with that. I'd say like I've always been inquisitive and I've always been straightforward and like to cut out the bullshit. So I'd say like that's almost a prerequisite for me as well, from my view at least. Like questioning everything, not just accepting something as it's presented to you and questioning it and trying to understand how things are and why they're that way. So
yeah, I feel like to that point, by the way, sorry, mm-hmm, I just like wanted to say this, like I feel like a lot of, you know, like when I first came into doing this, you know, I was 17 years old and like I was reading Richard Lewis and Thorin and Kelsey Moser and Drexen and others, right, that like were around at that time. And like I think the easiest thing to do is to like look at those people and to want to imitate them in the sense of like doing exactly what they're doing. And so like one of the reasons that like people like Thorin are successful as like either analysts or opinion columnists is because like they have credibility, right? Like they've been, if in his example, he's been here for nearly two decades and like he's contributed to the industry in various different ways. And so like people care about his opinion because he's given them a reason to. They're not going to care about your opinion if you've been doing this for 6 months. And that's just fact, right? You have mm-hmm. to You have to build credibility. In my case, that's been building credibility through being a reporter, right? Like, people correctly assume that my opinions are based off of conversations I'm having with executives and players and everything else, right?
Yeah.
And so that's right. But like, you know, I like many started off my career wanting to be like those people and sort of just writing my opinion and it not being consumed because nobody really cared what I had to say. And so I think like the biggest thing is you have to figure out what differentiates you, whether that be like you have some sort of like analytical brain, stats brain or whatever, and you're able to do things that others are not, or at least be able to deliver it in a way that are not visually or whatever that may be. Or you're in like the case of myself, like you're really good at reporting and injecting, you know, new details of information into your work.
That's fair.
And so I think that's super important. I think people often forget that's a thing.
No, so. True. I mean, like for Richard and Thorin, for example, like they stand out because they are very much themselves and they do things their own way. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're probably not going to have much success if you're just trying to become them, you know, as a reason they are as they are. So one thing I've noticed, this job can be quite a thankless job when it comes to like you put a big story out there, whatever, you will reveal some details that were not publicly known beforehand. And they'll skip straight past your name and look for the details they want and then bugger off, which is fine. It is what it is, but it is quite a thankless job in that sense. So obviously, we don't get validation and or like job satisfaction from the reaction from the public and the readers. So what kind of keeps you going? Where do you find that the moments of like, oh yeah, I've done a real fucking good job here?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I get some of that like satisfaction and validation now, but it took a long time to get there. And actually, yeah. it used to be very negative feedback more than anything. Even in the case where I was like completely telling the truth and like my sources were impeccable, I still was just like getting smacked by communities. And so I think that like it's super in those moments, you know, like. You have to be a little bit arrogant and confident to like tell yourself you know better. Mm-hmm. And that like these fans don't get it. The one thing that kind of keeps me going though every single day is I feel like I'm working for a better cause, right? Like I have met and continue to meet journalists younger than I am or journalists less experienced than I am. And I like want to make this industry better and easier for them in some ways. Not in the sense that they don't have to work hard, but rather the fact that like they don't have to deal with the difficult executives and difficult PR people that I once dealt with in the same way.
Right.
And I've always tried to make it a point when talking to some of these executives who have been here for a long time, who don't necessarily understand journalism, you know, I take time to like sort of reconcile with some of them. And that doesn't mean that I'm like bending, right? Or like that I am not saying critical things any longer. I certainly do. But at the end of the day, like, you know, somebody gets a job promotion or somebody like, you know, has some monumental achievement for their organization. And like, I'm one of the first people to shoot them a text or write them an email and say, congratulations. Like next time you're in New York or I'm in LA or I'm in London or wherever it may be, like, let's meet up. Right. And like, it's okay to have like off the record, just normal conversations with people, right? We're all human at the end of the day. And you don't have to bend. You don't have to bend your ethics, right? So for me, like I look at it as just like you know, the relationship building that I try to do and the work that I try to do, I try to make it better for the people that come after me. And also give back to those people too. I've always been you know, like I'm thankful for the people that gave back to me. Richard Lewis is one of those people, but also Kevin Morris that works at Dot Esports was one of those people that really invested in me pretty heavily early in my career. And so like I am appreciative of what those people did for me, and I want to do that for other people.
When you say about having like harmless casual conversations with people, do you find that people seem to be less trusting of you because of your job? Like obviously you're a trustworthy guy and such, like you have to be in this job. The amount of information that we're sitting on that we have not told anybody is insane. I assume you've got the shit tons more than me, but nonetheless, like but I have it where people all the time will say, oh, I can't tell you because you'll go and write about it. And then I have to try and reassure them that I'm a trustworthy guy, even though it should be known. Do you know what I mean? It's like it creates a weird dynamic where like any other job, you just go home or go out and have a chat with somebody and it's fine. But it seems to be for this, I don't really get to clock off so much. Maybe that's more of a personal thing, but...
No, it definitely happens to all of us. I do, you know, I, like, will reach out to someone to try to set up an off-the-record, completely casual coffee, drink, whatever it may be, and, like, I get PR people looped in all the time, which is, like, kind of defeats the conversation, and, because that's not what I'm after, right? Like, I'm being very transparent with sort of my motivations of meeting those people, and so, you know, like, the best thing I can do in those types of situations, and I've been in several in the past few weeks, is to, like, show up and just do what I said I was going to do. Completely off the record. You know, it's almost like a test, I feel like, with the PR people show up at the table. Yeah. And it's like I can be trusted to be told things. And like, look, like, I'm not being told things. I think people may misinterpret what I'm saying. I'm not being told things so I can't report them. Mm-hmm. I am rather just having casual conversation, trying to connect with these people so that when there is conversation that I need information or they need information, they can make the phone call to me and I can make the phone call to them. And we can sort of establish in those conversations that information can be shared. But I do think it's valuable that, to have sort of like just human conversations with people because, they end up trusting you more in the end. And I feel that, like, you know, I've had some executives say to me that, like, certain journalists that I know tell them that every single thing is on the record. And I was like, no wonder that person never
gets
anything.
Bloody hell. Right. Okay. Yeah. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. No wonder that person never gets anything because they're, like, afraid to be trusted. Or people are afraid of trusting them. I think it's super important to sort of, like, understand the craft and understand at the end of the day that, like, even though our job is to seek information, is to do so in an ethical way. And it's also you have to remember that people are human. You cannot treat people as if every single person is the source all 100% of the time.
No, that's fair. So you put out a tweet not too long ago. I just want to know if you're comfortable speaking about it with in terms of, like, the pressures and such that come along with being a young person who's in a good position. Are you okay speaking about that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure.
So what do you feel like people think you have to go in above and beyond all the time because you're in the position you are now while still being young? Or what's kind of the crux of the point you were making there?
Yeah, I certainly felt that over my career for sure. I have been, I guess the best word, although I don't like using it as a white male, to be frank, discriminated against by my age or because of my age. But yeah, I certainly have encountered people who judge me based on that solely and not my ability. You know, for context for our viewers, like, I still don't think a lot of people know this. I'm 22 years old. I turned 23 in a little bit over a month. And I've been at ESPN since I was 19. I've been doing this since I was 17. And yeah, I mean, like, it, to me, there's definitely, like, a little bit of pressure. I would say that pressure existed a lot when I first got to ESPN. When I first got to ESPN, the company, was sort of trying to figure out digital media in a way that I think it now has figured out. And certainly, we've had some leadership changes and, both on my team, but also in terms of the overall company where I feel like it is less of an elephant in the room,
right,
age, which I really appreciate that. And I don't think it's just 'cause I've gotten older. I just think it's because it's, like, more accepted, that there are young people who are highly successful, which is great. But my point wasn't only just to ESPN. You know, this is a little personal, but, like, I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, in a not so well off family, and so, like, you know, I like meet friends who, like, had this, like, wonderful start to life of, like, thousands of dollars and nice cars, mm-hmm. and, like, all of this, and they're able to, like, go off post college, and their parents are helping them get on their feet. Like, my family helped me as much as they could, but, like, when you come from the background that I come from, like, that's not a lot, right? Yeah. Like, I, like, was in a car accident right before I moved and took the job full-time with Dot Esports, and, like, guess who bought the car? Me, right? Like, and like, using that money and taking a loan that was in my name, I didn't have a guarantor. I didn't have a guarantor for my first apartment, right? Like, I, like, had to, like, stepstone all of that, right? Yeah. Like, getting credit is incredibly difficult when you're 22 years old, even if I've had credit since I was 18 and like have never missed a payment on anything. But it's just like, it's just the age. It's just the way that people my age are treated. And it's constantly something like different. And whether that's personal or professional, and like, it can be like really stressful and anxious to make you deal with all of it, because like it's very difficult to get on your feet if you don't have one step ahead, or if you don't have middle class or upper middle class parents who really help you get there. And I like my family, my mom in particular, like to her credit, is a fantastic mother, but like the facts like it you know, we're not so to the point that like if I'm in trouble my mom can just throw me $5,000 and I'm okay, right? Yeah, like yeah. That doesn't exist. So
how do you deal with those pressures and that discrimination as such? And by the way, it's not delegitimized just because you're a white male and facing that, you know, it's still a thing.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, how just, do you, is just it just head like, down?
Yeah. I mean, to that point, like I'm just always like super hesitant to ever try it, 'cause like, I know there are people that are like legitimately discriminated against in this world based off like color or sex. And mm-hmm. So I'm always like hesitant to go like, yeah, like I am being too. But yeah, you're right. Like head down is the right mentality. Let your work speak for itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had an editor once tell me, like, we knew you were good at esports, but we didn't know you were a good writer. I was like, oh, great, thanks. That makes me feel real good about myself. And that was, like, after I had just nailed, like, a really big story. Mm. To me, like, it's just continually letting it speak for itself. I've broken hundreds of stories throughout my career. I continue to. I'm connecting with, like, and this is probably the weirdest thing about my job is, like, you know, I'll, like, get breakfast or a coffee with a billionaire, and like they're sitting across the table from me, and I'm able to have this very high level discussion with them. Like, this person's like a million or 100 million x my worth net worth, like way more than that probably. Yeah. And like, but to me, like, I'm confident in my like intelligence and my ability as a journalist that like doesn't matter how much money that person's worth, it doesn't matter how much money I'm worth. It's like at the end of the day, like I'm able to connect with them and I'm able to have a high level conversation with them because I put in the work outside of it. I like have my head down. I'm doing my research. I'm constantly having discussions to better understand what I'm covering, to better understand what I'm dealing with, to better understand finance and business and everything else. And like, that's what's important. That's what's important to me.
No, that's awesome about the billionaire thing, by the way. It's good to be surrounded by that kind of company, you know, like it's amazing. But
yeah, I'm not the party type, so I don't often party with these people, but I certainly like try to connect with them and learn from them. And also, like, some of them are people I cover, so it's nice to be able to hop on the phone with them, you know, or connect with them in person.
Without a doubt. So I want to switch it up a tiny little bit. So it mid last year I took on the role of editor at Esports Insider. Now personally, I still don't feel qualified for the role now. I'll say that. Like, sure. I don't think I'm there yet, but I see it as ESI investing in me, and I think I've got the capability and the potential there to get good, you know. But I'm still very much trying to break stories and interview the right people and such. But what I want to ask is, what's the kind of structure like at ESPN Esports? Because it seems to have the most comprehensive and well-structured team out there. I don't know how many editors you've got over there, but it seems like quite a few from what I see, you know, whereas ESI is just me. Yeah. And then a bunch of freelancers underneath me. What's it like? Yeah. At ESPN?
So when I came on, we had three people, myself included. We have scaled up over the past few years to 13. Mm-hmm. Who focus on esports either 50% of their day or more. So 11 of those people, all they do is esports, and two of them, like I said, esports is 50% of what they do or more in any given day. We have, I believe, an editorial right now. We have five editors. I have one editor who manages me and also manages Emily Rand. His name's Sean Morrison.
Yeah.
And then Sean reports to Elizabeth Baugh, who Elizabeth is new to ESPN Esports, but not new to ESPN. She's made the rounds at ESPN, and she's really, really smart and very much like a people-oriented person, which, given her senior position, is like perfect for our group. Like, we have a range of personalities from all of us. Yeah. So like Elizabeth manages another guy named Joe DiMartino, who has worked with her for a long time, and he does some traditional sports stuff, but also does esports, and he manages Fion Tower.
Right.
And then also we have other editors in the group, Darren Kolitsky and Brian McComo, who sort of work with all of us on, you know, on a sort of case by case basis. And so that's our like editorial team is all of us. And then we've been actually expanding pretty significantly in the past 6 to 8 months into the video side of things.
Yeah.
My best friend Thomas Tichio got hired at ESPN to work on like the live coverage, live event coverage for all sports previously, but had been moved over to digital video and really taken role in like setting up our YouTube channel and like him doing more video for esports in his spare time. And his team, we brought in a guy named David Presley, who's fantastic, who's been tasked to launch our Twitch channel and or at least original programming on our Twitch channel. Dave is previously at the Food Network and did a lot of the social video stuff there and at Thrillist before that. So he has a lot of background on that. And he's also just like a gamer, as many people are, like outside of work. And so this is like the perfect role for him. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that understands what he's doing. And then his team also includes Daniel Collette, who's a producer that used to work at Blizzard and the Boston Uprising, who's based out in L.A. Another producer, Jared Hobbs, who is a gamer who got brought into ESPN is on in a rotational program and then hired full time by us. And then Arto Cal, who is our host. So yeah, 13 people. It's been really cool to see it scale up.
Mm-hmm.
And how we've changed and evolved. And we actually just had this week our annual summit where everybody comes together to Connecticut to our main office. And sort of like pitches ideas and talks about like how we're doing, how we can improve, what we can do better, and has, you know, executive level leadership come in to speak to us. And that was like, I have not felt better than about what's going on at ESPN Esports than I do this week, probably, because everything is very, very positive.
That's awesome. And we'll get more into the video stuff later. That's kind of on my mental list of what we're going to go through. But I want to kind of speak about the importance of having good editors, you know, like, as I say, looping back, I wouldn't class myself as a good editor by any means. Like, I'm getting the job done so far, and I've got plenty of ideas, not enough time to implement them yet but we'll kind of get there. But like, I feel that the public perception of editors sometimes is, oh, they go through the articles and make sure there's no typos and that everything's factually correct, and obviously there's a lot more that goes into things than that. So like, yeah. how vital for your work, just to put it into perspective for the listeners and the watchers, how vital is having a good editor for your entire process, really?
God, I've been so blessed throughout my career to have probably the best editors in all of esports. I started off with Drexen, who I think is quite good. He was really good at being trusting and being a good mentor. But also like helping shape stories and provide feedback. And then I got the person who I like still consider, he flies under the radar because he doesn't try to be a superstar, but he is a superstar, and that's Kevin Morris. Mm-hmm. At Dot Esports. Kevin is a killer, man. Like, had a educational background as for a short period of time, and like was so good at bringing me in to meeting every single week and going through everything I'd written, you know, where we could improve, planning stories, helping me become a better writer and reporter, and being able to deliver things in a way that's digestible. See, that's the biggest thing that goes unsaid about editors, is like, it's not just like the copy editing side of things, of like grammar and spelling, but rather like the structure of stories and how can an audience best understand what you're trying to say. That's like the big thing, right? Mm-hmm. And because like, let's face it, people who are reading these pieces on the internet don't have a journalism level. I mean, even I don't have a journalism education traditionally, but like, you know, these aren't like English scholars, right? These are people who have probably at most like a 10th or 11th grade high school English education. And so you've got to write to them in a way that they can understand it.
Yeah.
And digest very complex details at times in very simple terms. It's not about using SAT, which is like the American standard admissions test for college. Like, it's not about using like SAT vocabulary words. It's about delivering these things in ways that people could read it. So editors are such a big part of what I do. You know, I recently put out a piece about Vulcan, and Cloud9, Dignitas, and Evil Geniuses. And like, when I submitted that, I literally messaged Sean, my editor, and was like, this is crap. I was like, the information's there. I have 3.5 hours of audio that I just transcribed, all on the record, plus tons of sourcing that like makes this work. Yeah. But it's craply written. This is garbage. Right. How can we fix it? And he wasn't the one that ended up editing it. I had Brian and Joe, who are on our team, edit it. Brian first and then Joe second. And like, I was pretty happy with how it came out in the end. And a pretty positive reception too, because it was unique. But yeah, I mean, like, Sean and Elizabeth are like in my planning conversations all the time. They're like, they're setting priorities for me. They're taking my feedback and like organizing travel and everything. Like, they're super involved in what I do. And it's not just the copy aspect of that. And in fact, like, we have an entire copy desk that their job is to fix my grammar and my spelling errors. The editors I work with job is to like approve my stories and set my priorities and make sure that I'm hitting deadlines. Like, and it's such a, and like, it's a personal relationship for whoever your managing editor is. And I mean, that's what it is for me and Sean. Like, he was on a rotational program at ESPN and did 3 months with our program. And when his rotational program was up there a year long, I was a huge advocate. Like, please hire this guy. Like, even if he's only is more recently my boss. But in terms of like, his impact, like, I knew it was going to be big 3 years ago. And I wanted him in our team. And so, you know, it's good to have a good relationship with your editor as well.
Will we ever see you become an editor, do you think? Do you think that's in the pipeline, or would you prefer to be out there getting, you know, in the nitty gritty of stuff and reporting yourself, or what kind of do you see for your future in this field? I know it's a hard question to ask. I don't know my goals yet, but I mean, I'm older than you, but I mean, still.
Yeah. So like, I love helping writers get better. This evening I'm going to a New York Excelsior college mixer where they've asked me to talk a little bit about journalism to college students in the New York area. And I'm like I love doing that. I love speaking to journalism classes. I spoke at Stanford last week in Palo Alto. Nothing makes me happier than like giving back and helping other people succeed and seeing them grow. You know, I have the fortune of right now in my current role at ESPN being able to do that with some of our freelancers, who I'm collaborating with, or they like seek me out for feedback.
Yeah.
That's not my official role. But certainly when like I'm collaborating with a freelancer who's less experienced, like I hope to be able to provide that to them, and helping them learn and grow. So, you know, to answer your actual question, I think one day I will want to be more involved in management and budgeting and editing, but I don't think I will ever want to also give up what I do now. And yeah. So I think the role that I would need to have is some sort of hybrid. You know, ESPN editors are pretty straightforward of what they are. They are editors and not talent,
right?
You know, writers, hosts, et cetera, whatever you would consider talent. And for me, like I wouldn't mind being like in charge of something or helping lead some sort of group, but I don't think I could forego the actual like nitty gritty myself, because I actually really enjoy it too.
Right, got you. And I'm trying to like forge my role into being some sort of hybrid thing. You know, I'm trying to do it. It's frustrating almost as well, because I'm sitting on a few things now that if my full time job was writing, like would be out there, you know. And it's just, yeah, it's difficult, but trying to work shit out. So what would you class your big break being? Not necessarily joining a publication, but in terms of like your first big story that you felt accomplished and you were 100% confident in, that was well received and such. I know you said earlier that you kind of got negative feedback from certain communities for a while, but which one would you say kind of put the name Jacob Wolf on the map? And perhaps even started the coveted Wolf Bomb movement.
Yeah, there's a couple of them that I'm like racking around my brain right now when you ask that. you know, I was really fortunate to get one like 4 months into my career, which was the Corey piece about the Meet Your Makers player mid laner being verbally abused by his management, and then like fleeing to Canada, and then like Riot ignoring it for a couple months. Like, it was really bad. And I think like Richard Lewis broke that story in some more timetable as well, although I had some things he didn't, and he had some things I didn't.
Right.
So we were kind of like in the same conversation together, and people were talking about both pieces because they contributed unique insights in certain portions of them. You know, I had a little bit of a couple month period where I felt like I was on fire. It was my last like few months at Dot Esports. Where I like broke a big story about a challenger team in Europe called Huma, who had like fudged all these numbers and screwed people out of money.
Right.
Like had to sell Santorin's contract to a North American challenger team called Ember just to be able to pay the bills. It was messy. And then also like within a month of that, like I had another big story come out about Martin Shkreli, the billionaire pharmaceutical CEO who like is now in jail for fraud, among other things, and securities issues. But he at the time had invested in esports. I had interviewed him actually when he first came into the space. And then I wrote the piece that ultimately was him being sued and sought after tens of thousands of dollars from employees that he did not pay.
Right.
So that was a couple of good months. You know, the one story I always look at that it was so hard to deal with, but also when I got vindicated for it, was also sort of the one that like put me, put me on the map. You know, like the negative feedback lasted for a month before things came out that it was true, and that was the Rox Tiger story that I did. I wrote about Rox Tigers at the time. One of the best teams in the world in League of Legends, that they were going to be disbanding following the World Championship, and we wrote that story during the World Championship. Rox came out and said that I was a liar and that they were stunned to see ESPN publish such a thing. You know, I had tried to have conversations with them in management on the ground in Chicago during, because that was the Worlds, it was in North America. And I was unable to, and like it got really nasty in terms of the negative feedback and people like finding previous address information of mine, thankfully not current at that time, and people like sending direct denial of service attacks to my house for my internet connection, and like it was terrible, and it actually ended up getting resolved on like Thanksgiving morning, American Thanksgiving morning. That I like woke up and my phone was hot to the touch with all the messages of like all of the players have left except one. And so it was true.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, backlash both from big community figures, many of them who I've made up with now. All of that was just really bad. But also I think that like, I think I was a little underestimated before that. And I think that, that no longer happens anymore. And I certainly have had stories and will continue to have stories that are controversial, not because of anything I've done, just because the reporting itself may not necessarily be, the facts are not necessarily favorable to people who are idolized. I hope that as those continue to happen, and the truth comes out and the reporting that I'm very confident in continues, that people realize I'm not just pulling this out of my butt, man. Like I'm doing really hard. There's
nothing
work
to gain from doing that shit, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think people like me pulling stuff out of my butt just hurts me if it's not true. So, you know, I'm out here like really grinding to get things right. And for years and months, like I have one story I've not put out, and it's been like sitting in an inbox for like 2 years because it's just like such a pain in the butt to deal with. And when those come out, like it's a lot of work. It's a lot of labor, but I love doing it. So I'm going to continue to do so.
Yeah. So you say like the denial of the story, and then it becomes true. That's quite a trend we see, and it's not just in esports, but I mean especially in esports, especially with like the roster move happenings, like CS:GO, it seems to happen quite a lot, and these public figures and coaches and managers and stuff don't realize that they can just not comment on things at all. Like, do you think that's the best way of dealing with things instead of coming out and then ended up looking stupid? But the thing is, they never get flamed by the fans when it turns out that they were lying. You know, it just gets forgotten about suddenly.
Well, the one thing about Rocks is they got 3 Thorin videos about them calling me out. So that's put them on the map. Interesting. But no, I think like that's what you just said is things that I have sat across the table from major team executives and said that exact same thing. Mm. You don't have to comment. I will call you before it's published to give you the opportunity to comment. If you tell me no comment and then you go and flame me online, we have a problem.
Of course.
Right? Like, if you don't comment, all good. No disrespect towards me. No disrespect towards you. This is my job. That is yours. And, like, the best thing you can do is just shut up. If you have nothing to say, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything.
No, that's fair. I could probably take notes from that, to be completely honest with you. I find it too fun being an asshole sometimes, but
me too in some occasions. But like I still think that like these team executives are just better off. Like, if something is legitimately wrong, call it out. But if the public's misconstruing something, or you just don't appreciate that it's out, like, shut up. Yeah. Shut up. This is journalism. Like, I think that people, you know where I think that stems from is that, so I think people in tech, PR in particular, because esports is this hybrid of tech and sports. I think people in tech PR, because it's like such a, and video game PR, it's such a controlled environment where like everything is hawked by PR and communications people, that they have so much control over certain publications and let them have that control. I think that a lot of the PR people come from tech, and some of the CEOs and executives do too. So they're used to that. So when they encounter people like me, they don't like it. Mm. Whereas in sports, like, everyone acts on the assumption that you do something, it's going to be reported on. So don't do anything stupid. It's not my fault that you did something stupid. It's just my job to report on when somebody does something stupid. So, you know, like, I think that's the big thing is that it's like two very like adversarial things. And to be frank, we have and had some people in the esports industry who like do highly unethical things as journalists, in terms of like letting people review copy or their videos, or like withholding information just for the sake of withholding it, right? Like, not to like appease people.
Right.
I had very early in my career, well, you don't do things like this person. And it's like, I am not that person. I have a different standard than that person. My bosses would fire me if I did what that person did. So, like, what do you want me to do? Like, I'm just going to do things that I've been told the way to do them. And, like, that's the ethical and fair way, rather than, like, playing the game of, like, receiving a free vacation for being friendly, right? Like, it's weird. I'm super not in that ballgame.
No, I will never stand for that stuff either. It don't make sense to me personally, like, doing it for your own gain. That's not, you're in the wrong job if you're looking for like that kind of shit personally. But what I want to kind of speak about a little bit is the hardest story that it was perhaps the hardest thing for you to learn about, or the hardest thing for you to actually put together and put out. I have a feeling I know what it is. I have a feeling, but
I was gonna say, I'm curious what you think it is. It's
well, there was the shooting, wasn't there?
Yeah, you're probably right.
Because that can't have been easy to.
Yeah.
Because you went there, right, and did your thing, and like, yeah, and so it was quite soon after it all happened, right? So it probably hadn't fully set in. Exactly. So I mean, that can't have been easy by any means.
Yeah, I mean, that week was just so I had worked like 2 or 3 weeks consecutively, no days off. And that Sunday that the Jacksonville Madden shooting happened was my day off. And I'm like sitting on the roof of my apartment building here in New York, like reading a book, and somebody messages me that Twitch clip link, which is a little hard to swallow. And so like that Monday was ESPN The Picnic, which is like our annual event gathering at an amusement park in Connecticut. So I had plans to go to that. And then that Tuesday I had rented a car, that I could not get a refund on. I rented a car to go to Philadelphia to visit a friend of mine. Right. And so that Wednesday I was dispatched down to Jacksonville. I got there as soon as I could on, like 8 a.m. flight out of LaGuardia. Yeah, and the next like 5 days was really hard. You're right. I got there and I met Jordan Williams, who is the Hooters chef that saved O'Leary, Timothy Anselmo's life. And he walked us around like the back, and like I couldn't see in the venue, so I was trying to have a visual understanding of what happened, and like it was closed off and it was a crime scene, so I couldn't, you know, like I hopped the fence and like tried to look through the window, and they had like black paper like put up over the window so you couldn't really see. Where I got, I don't know if lucky is the right word, but where I certainly like. Where I was able to figure it out is I found a YouTube video of when that venue opened, when the pizza restaurant opened, that had a tour of the gaming room in the back, and it hadn't changed, and so I had this like really good understanding that, you know, using the YouTube video and putting it against the description of survivors, that I could show or I could understand what happened that day. And there was actually a picture. I was asked not to publish it, but was told I could use it for information. There was a picture that a documentary crew for one of the players had taken about five, or about 2 minutes or 3 minutes before the shooting, and everybody was still standing in the same place.
Bloody hell.
And like you don't see the gunman because he walked in. But yeah, I mean, like it's really hard. I remember meeting O'Leary in his hospital bed in between his first and second surgery. And obviously we ended up doing a SportsCenter and a written piece on him, months later, about sort of his journey of coming back with, 'cause he was shot twice in his hand and fractured a lot of his hand. And so, yeah, I mean, it was really hard. I had a colleague from ESPN, the magazine, David Fleming, working on it with me. But Dave was there for like a little bit more than 24 hours. I ended up being there for 5 days and really trying to understand the pulse of Jacksonville, who, you know, like it's a city that has had major crime before, but is certainly like this felt like it shook a community that had gone untouched in gaming, and esports as a whole. So it was, you're right, it was really, really difficult, to put it together. And the subsequent O'Leary story, actually, the SportsCenter and written piece, was really hard too, because I had had a few months to process everything, and I had watched the video clip, the Jacksonville video clip, probably 26, 27 times, of the shooting and hearing the bullets and the screams. My lead for the written story was as if I was Timothy Anselmo, and that I was in, like, you know, through his eyes, running through this or running out of this thing with 100 people closed or put into a 1,000 square foot space, and trying to escape for my life. And like I tried to put myself in his shoes by talking to him and by using accounts of other survivors that were near him and using that photo and everything. And it was heartbreaking. I mean, I had to stop while writing that because it was just really hard to continue writing it. And like I'm not someone who gets very emotional very easily. Full disclosure though, when my producer partner, producer editor partner sent me the SportsCenter feature piece that he had completed, that I was on set for all five shoots of it, all five video shoots for that piece. When he sent it to me, I cried, because I felt like here's this person's story who's so hard, and I connected with O'Leary in a way that I don't think anyone else who wrote about him had. And here's this person, and I just hope we did him proud. I just hope we did the right thing and the right job, and I felt like we did in that moment, being able to watch the 12-minute piece that my producer editor partner sent to me. Like I just cried at my desk, sitting where I am right now, because like it was like I wanted it, I was so emotionally invested as a reporter in making sure we got this right,
And was
and
it
it meant a lot to me.
rewarding when you saw the positive reactions to the work that you'd put in?
Yeah, I mean, O'Leary messaged me screenshots of parents of kids who died at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, messaging him saying that they had watched SportsCenter and they had saw his story, and messaged him on Instagram saying that they wished him well, and explaining who they were.
Bloody hell.
And like, I've read Dave Cullen's Parkland book that includes a lot of those voices, and it's like, shootings are never easy to cover. They certainly do take a toll on you as a reporter. I'm in a better spot now but for a while, like I definitely had really bad nightmares that like I was in a room like that, or like in a restaurant or something that
Right.
someone came in with a semi-automatic weapon and shot up. And like, yeah, I mean, like I to see that type of reaction, particularly because it was on SportsCenter on ESPN1, which is one of a massive sports television network. To see the positive reaction certainly was moving, and it made me feel like I pushed for that story really hard. I got told no a couple different times before it ended up where it did.
Right.
And to see it sort of his story be told the way that it did, and then for him to go on to win an ESPY later that summer, become the first esports athlete to win an ESPY and beat out Ninja nonetheless to get it. That told me that we had done the right thing.
No, without a doubt. And so, like, obviously, goes without saying, but very good job there. What I want to do is I'll
Thank you.
lighten the mood a little bit now. Obviously, it's a heavy subject that. So you mentioned earlier about the video content,
Yep.
and so I myself am starting to do that now, but it's on my own accord and on my own channel and such. Where and you are also doing it, but that seems to be more on ESPN's behalf. So is that like is it mandated that you do all of this on camera work, or is it something you want to do? Like, and how have you found it as you've gone on? Because I've only been doing it, say, like 3 months, 2.5 months at this point, but I'm feeling a lot more confident. I still feel like I'm much better in front of a keyboard than in front of a webcam and a microphone, you know. But like, I'm starting to get the groove of it. Like, so yeah, was it? Can you explain that kind of not necessarily transition because you're still doing what you're doing, but adding another string to your bow with video work?
So I like in 2017, I was so vocal, probably annoyingly vocal to my colleagues about wanting to do more video. We did not have the resources to do it in the type of way we are doing now in terms of people, because it takes a lot of people to put together like our weekly show that just launched this week for League of Legends, and like the free agency show that we did in November, which is awesome. I love doing that, and I've wanted to do that for so many years. I'm so glad it finally worked out. I wouldn't say, like, if I told ESPN tomorrow I no longer wanted to do it, they would not force me. So it's not a mandate in that regard. But I mean, like I mentioned earlier, we brought in Dave Presley, and he built himself a team over the fall. He came in the summer and was like tasked to, you figure out esports video and our strategy, and you figure out what we're doing with Twitch. That's his job. And Dave and I have formed a really good friendship. And also, like it's really nice. I've always really admired and appreciated Ardo Ocal, our host, and like him and I actually commute to work together most of the time. He just had a baby, so he just had a baby. So he, I've been going on my own. The past few weeks as he's taken some leave, understandably.
Too right.
But yeah, like it's easier for me to train and cheaper for me to train to White Plains, from where I live in Brooklyn. And he has a car, and then we ride to the office together, which about 1.5 hours each way. And so like him and I are really close friends personally. Our off-camera synergy definitely spills into on-camera. The fact that like when the weekly ESPN esports show, it's usually him and I that are on the desk together. And I like really enjoy working with him. And actually, that O'Leary project, having served as a producer on the SportsCenter side of things, really lit a fire under my ass to do more production in 2020. And so I hope to. Some of the stuff I've been pitching and some of the stuff we're doing now with Rift Rewind in particular. The League of Legends show, I am working as a producer on as much as I am a talent as well. So it's definitely something like I was really interested in doing, knew that I could do. Look, I'm not the most attractive human being in the world. I try. So I certainly have some like self-conscious parts about myself. Like I've recently lost 60 pounds, so that's part of that, right? But yeah, I was really confident in my ability and my delivery though, in the way that I speak, in the way that I speak when I'm on a show or when I'm doing interviews. And so I think you'll be seeing me do more of that in 2020 and beyond. And it's certainly something I've wanted to do, and I'm glad that we now have the staff to do it at ESPN.
Any video content coming for yourself in your own brand, or is it all part of working within the ESPN brand as such?
Yeah, I think I may be launching, well, it already exists and I've streamed on it before, but relaunching my own Twitch channel.
Right.
I don't want to hard commit to that yet, but it's something I've wanted to do. It will be more so me playing and like doing entertainment and just like Let's Play and stuff like that more than the actual show stuff, because like it would be a ton of time that I don't have to
yep.
do all the show stuff alone, especially when like I already have a team around me that does that, and that's
mm-hmm.
what they do every single day. But yeah, I mean, like I certainly think that I'll be I certainly will be doing more with them and launching more with them. But in terms of my own thing, I think it will be more so like personal Twitch streams. I'll be doing that more, I think, in 2020.
Understood. So in the spirit of keeping within an hour, that's what I like to do it, and I don't want to take up too much more of your time, and unfortunately I've got crap ton of stuff to get through as well. One last thing I want to do before we wrap up is, have you got any promising up and coming journalists, writers and reporters that you think people should be keeping an eye on?
100%. So a couple different people that I think are worth mentioning, the first of them being Ashley Kang, who's freelancer for ESPN. She lives in Seoul, South Korea, is bilingual in English and Korean. She is awesome. I'm collaborating with her a lot more this year. I'm very excited to be doing so because I believe in her a lot. To see her, I think she was runner up for the esports award last year,
so, yeah.
Or third place. I'm not sure which one, but hats off to her. She deserves it. She grinds her ass off. So definitely shout out to her. Less up and coming, but certainly notable. My colleague Emily Rand is just because she doesn't get as much Twitter love as me or Tyler Erzberger, Fionn. I think that she deserves it. She's awesome. She's one of the smartest analytical minds that exist in League of Legends, particularly in media. And she's also, I think, a better writer than Tyler and I are. But I'm kind of carried by like my information gathering, right? And I recognize that. So Emily's great. A couple other people that, like Laura Lenardi, who's now like in the absence of Darius, who now works for Schalke, who used to run the Shot Caller. I find that the LEC doesn't really have a ton of English language content that.
Right.
From the media side of things, because they're in Germany and therefore like a lot of German outlets and also Central European outlets cover them. I think that like Laura has been doing a good job so far with the stories she's doing in the LEC. I think that's a really necessary plug, so I'm glad to have seen Invin move her out there. Yourself and these
you don't have to do out. That you don't
no,
have to
I,
do
I,
that
no I legit I legitimately like what you all do. I like what the Esports Observer is doing too, particularly in a world where like I'm not as business oriented as I once was, at least in terms of writing about it, because like there's an audience that exists for that. It's not as big as I think anybody would quite like at this point.
Agreed.
But it needs to be served. Like,
agreed.
You can't just ignore it. And so I have moments where like it is definitely worth it in terms of like breaking Call of Duty League buy-in numbers and stuff like that. Like that's information that needs to be out there, and I'm glad I have the access to be able to get it. But like that needs to be served, and Esports Insider and Esports Observer are doing that in a way that's very positive. And also like another team I just like want to give a lot of love to, because I met their editor when he was kind of theorycrafting what it would be a couple of years ago, and I think they're doing a really good job, is the Launcher team at the Washington Post. I think they're doing really cool stuff. The Post is a awesome journalism entity, in my opinion. I like Mike Hume. He's a former ESPN guy. We did not overlap at ESPN, but he worked with a lot of the same people I worked with at the beginning of my career at ESPN before he went to the Post. And he's overseeing their team of Gene Park and others that I think they're actually doing some really cool content. So I keep an eye there. I hope that they continue to do that. Because I think it's good stuff. So I'll limit my shout outs there, but that's all those people definitely deserve some love.
Okay, lovely stuff. And now it's time to shout yourself out. Where can people find you and your work should they wish to do so?
Yeah, so my Twitter is @JacobWolf, pretty simple. Our ESPN's website is ESPN.com/esports, which is where you can find my writing. Our YouTube channel is YouTube.com/ESPN esports, which is where you can find my video on demand videos. And then our Twitch channel, which now has two shows a week, Mondays at 6 and Wednesdays at 6:30 or so. No, Wednesday at 7:30. Sorry. Those are on twitch.tv/ESPN esports. And the ESPN esports Twitter is ESPN_esports for now. I'm trying to fix that. You can find all our content there. I'm super excited. We're doing more than ever. And, after, you know, like I mentioned earlier in the episode, a big meeting this week, I'm super excited for what we're going to continue to do. And, some of our creative and fun ways to tell stories in esports throughout this year.
Lovely stuff. I just want to thank you for giving me an hour of your time. I really appreciate it, and keep up the good work. Obviously you will, and that goes without saying, but I look forward to seeing what's what, and hopefully I can compete with you on something rather soon.
I welcome it.
Like the Optic Infinite stuff. I want another one of those. So thank you again. Thank you also to everybody who's watched and listened. Yeah, every Tuesday it comes out. So feel free to subscribe on whichever platform you use, and I will see you in the next one. Cheers.